This is To Catch a Con Man, Season 2, in the Victim's Voices. I will take you on another fascinating journey, but this time you will hear from other men and women that, like me, have fallen prey to the various cons, scams, and deceits by one of the most prolific and successful con artists to live and operate in the Midwest. You know him as Ricky Dugo.
Could $100,000 sustain my life? It couldn't even come close. So listen to me. If I was going to be in some sort of con, scam, conniving thing, it'd be for millions. It wouldn't be for $100,000.
To Catch a Con Man is brought to you by Studio 847 in Long Grove, Illinois. Listener discretion is advised, as some of this programming contains language and content that might be offensive to some listeners.
Join me on this adventure to catch a con man. This is Adam Albin. Welcome back, and thank you for your continued support of my podcast, To Catch a Con Man. I am so excited to be behind the microphone once again. It's been over 6 months since I published Lou's interview, and I have taken a step back, a respite of sorts, while allowing this podcast to continue to organically grow, prosper, and flourish. You know, life is chock full of randomness and serendipitous moments. In this next two-part interview, we will take a slightly different approach, interviewing someone who knew the Dugos well, but she was not a victim of any personal fraud, cons, and or theft. We will gain insight into what it was like to work for Rick and Shannon Dugo as we head back in time to 2016 and talk to their nanny from the Lake of the Ozarks. Today, I've got an exciting new guest, one that I have never talked to, and we're going to learn a little bit about what it was like to be a nanny for Rick and Shannon Dugo. On with me, I've got Paige. She comes from the Lake of the Ozarks. Hi, Paige.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Thanks so much for affording me the time and allowing me to hear your stories. So, take me back in time. What year are we talking about that you were a nanny for the Dugos?
So this was in, I believe, April of 2016 is when I first made contact with Shannon. So I had graduated from college in December of 15 and hadn't found like a big girl job yet. So I'd done some like substitute teaching. I'd worked for a news station for a woman on maternity leave for a while. So I was just, you know, still looking for a job, still doing odds and ends. And then I have two sisters. So one of them had babysat for the Dugos previously at the lake. I think they found each other on like care.com or something. And they had a condo down the road from our lake house. And so my sisters had watched them a little bit. And I guess Shannon had reached out saying that they needed someone essentially full time for the summer of 2016. So I was like, you know what? This would be like 40 hours a week plus, and I could stay in my parents' lake house. And so I did that for pretty much the whole summer until I got my first job. So.
Yeah, that's not a bad gig, right? I mean, out of college, staying at a lake for the summer, you know, taking care of, you know, three kids. We won't say the names of the children. I've tried to protect them as best I can. So Shannon reached out to your sister, and that's how you guys met. So what's the first meeting like with Rick and Shannon? What are your first impressions?
Okay, so I was really excited because I thought this was going to be at their condo down the road, like 5 minutes from our house. So I was like, this is going to be super convenient. But Shannon was like, oh, actually, no, we've moved to the other side of the lake. So, which wasn't a big deal at the time, but it was about a 35-minute drive one way. And I think now they probably moved for two reasons. One, they probably weren't paying rent on their condo. And two, this new house was right down the street from this performance boat center where a lot of the cigarette boat owners keep their boats at the marina. There's a bar and restaurant there that's really nice. So I think that's where they went to schmooze, like wheel and deal people a lot of the time. It was really close to the house. So anyway, so I was down there on the other side of the lake. I pull up that first day to meet the kids and talk with Rick and Shannon. And it's just a stunning kind of Spanish style house, three floors, really pristine pool in the backyard, fenced in, like an outdoor fireplace situation. It was gorgeous. And the cigarette boy, think was parked there that day. If not, they had a million other toys and vehicles there.
Let's talk about what you saw.
When
you say toys and vehicles, like, what, you know, if you can go back and remember, what did you see?
Yeah, so Rick always drove this humongous, obnoxious like Ford dually truck. I guess that's what they hauled the boat with most of the time. They had this, like, all the bells and whistles tricked out, like, big rim Suburban. They had a Mercedes Sprinter van they took back and forth a few times with the kids. Like, this big dune buggy that we were just allowed to sit in, but never allowed to, like, start or drive anywhere. what else? Oh, they just kept like a Mercedes series at the lake. And actually, I'm kind of jumping around on my timeline here, but one time my car wouldn't start when I was like 1 a.m. and I was, they got home. And although you can just stay here, I was like, I appreciate that, but it's been like, I've been here for like 14 hours and I really just want to go home and shower and sleep in my own bed and stuff. And Shannon's like, oh, just take the Mercedes.
Wow.
And I was like, sorry, what? You know, at this time I was like 23 and I was like, this is worth more than my whole life. And they're like, oh, that's why we got insurance or whatever. So as soon as I got home, I took the long way home, honestly, but as soon as I got home, I looked it up and it was like $120,000 car.
Yeah. Was it dark gray or like a grayish color?
It was, I think this one was black. Yeah. It had this like window sticker in the back with the Italian flag that said Italia. Because I think Rick thought he was like part of the mafia or something, but it was giving more Jersey Shore vibes to me.
For sure. Your initial, reaction, your gut is telling you, wow, this is a beautiful house. They've got all the bells and whistles. They've got boats and cars and toys. And so this family must be, they must be someone, right? I mean, they must be important, successful, giving off an image, like this burgeoning success, that's how they make you feel.
Yeah. So, I'd only really talked with Shannon. She's the one who I dealt with most of the time with the kids. So I kind of talked to her on the phone a little bit and then I went in there. I know she's not completely innocent in all this, but I did like her at the time. She really was a good mom, it seemed. And so she and I were chatting on the couch. She's like really cute and like, I think she was 34 at the time, not much older than I am now, and petite, and just she's just really a cute cute girl. And then Rick comes in and I was like, girl, what's going on? Like, he was, what's the word more than ripped? He's like shred, like yoked. Like, he was huge. He was just like veins bulging everywhere. Like, you could tell immediately he was on roids. I think he's like 6'4", something like that. 6'4", 6'5". Just like a huge dude. He came in and he had this like fake nice air about him, but you can tell that he just really kind of wanted to tell you about himself and like all the stuff he did, all the stuff he had. It was a very much, he was a braggadocio for sure. So he's like, well, we've got this, and this, and we've got these, we bought this for our kids, and we come down here to the lake every weekend in the summer, and we put $1,000 cash of high-octane racing fuel in our cigarette boat every weekend and take out all of our friends. And I was like, you know, cool, like, kudos to you guys. I'm here making like $12 an hour and I'm thrilled, so I can't really relate to any of this. But yeah, I don't know, he's a character. I remember going home that night and just kind of giving my parents the lowdown about it. And at the time, I think Breaking Bad had just ended a few years prior. And then, like, Ozark was really big at the time. And so between the plots of those two, Dad's like, well, sounds like an Ozark situation. Like, guy coming from Chicago down to the lake and doing weird stuff. And, or, you know, on Ozark, the guy laundered his money for a car wash. And, of course, Rick always said he owned a bunch of car washes. So it was funny. And Dad's like, he might be part of the mob. I was like, I don't think so. But I think he's kind of an oddball. So yeah, that was kind of my first impression of him.
Yeah, so he gave you an interesting vibe.
Yeah,
for sure. You know, it's funny because a lot of women that meet him find him to be kind of creepy at first. But it's amazing how many have fallen in love. And you know, in regards to Shannon, I think a lot of people in general, their initial, you know, their reactions, you know, to who she is, you know, they're very favorable, you know, attractive, you know, I've heard that she is, you know, has been a good parent at times. I definitely err on the side of caution knowing what I know, but, I can't discredit what you're saying. And especially about the part where I believe, you know, that she knew more than she leads on to. So, so you start this job page, are you having a good time? I mean, is, you know, you got this family paying you $12 an hour, you got, you know, 40 hours of work. It's a, you know, is it a good job? You like it?
Yeah, I did. And I really felt it was a cash cow because I looked up the minimum wage that year. I was like, I'm pretty sure it was $7 something an hour. And it was like $7.65 an hour in Missouri that year. So I felt like I had a great little gig going. And the kids were really sweet. I mean, they were good kids. Again, I'm not going to disclose a lot of information about them. But she had two older ones from a previous relationship, and then Rick and Shannon had two together, and then she was pregnant with the fifth at the time.
Correct.
So a lot of the time I had four of them, but then they always had friends around who they were like taking out on the boat, people I assume they were conning out a bunch of money, looking back at it, but like young hot couples from the gym with little kids. So I'm a couple times I had like seven kids.
Wow.
Yeah, they all had kids coming around too. So it was definitely crazy, but I babysat before, and like I said, the kids were they were pretty well behaved. But you could definitely tell that there was a favoritism between with Rick and Shannon's kids versus Shannon's older kids from her previous relationship. So I tried to, you know, make all the kids feel special in the same way. But you could kind of tell where the priorities lied, especially when Rick was around. It was their little two. So But anyway, the immediately, I think the first thing that struck me as odd was there's just cameras everywhere around the house, like every angle, like except for the bathrooms, but like bedrooms, common areas, outside, everywhere. And I get, like, if you have a stranger watching your kids, you might want a nanny cam in the living room or something, you know? But it was just bizarre. And I think my sisters had the same experience when they watched them. But she and I would watch them constantly. Like, I think she'd be out with Rick while he was, like, giving his little elevator pitch to people. And she'd be on her phone, like, watching the security camera. Of me and the kids, because, like, you know, somebody would punch somebody or whatever, somebody start crying, I'd immediately get a text like, don't let him do this. And, you know, I don't know, like,
yeah, that's interesting. So, like, kind of like a helicopter parent. And so do you believe, in your estimation, that the cameras were there so that Shannon could watch the kids, or Shannon and Rick could watch the kids? Or do you think quite possibly they were there not only for that, but moreover, to make sure that unsavory, you know, I'll call them unsavory types, people that may be aggravated that Rick stole money, people that had allegations against him, you know, people that obviously had an axe to grind, may come and confront him at his house. Do you believe?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, looking back, I think that might be one of the reasons why they moved across the lake as well. Maybe too many people were getting their numbers, so to speak, and finding out where they lived. And he was very, like, open about telling people, like, swing by the house, I guess, trying to prove that he was trustworthy. But yeah, I think the majority of it was he obviously knew there were dozens of people out there who had it out for him. So, I mean, they were trying to protect their kids, and nobody ever came by the house, you know, unexpected when I was there with them. But yeah, looking back, I definitely think that's what it was, because they lived in this nice little neighborhood. And I mean, the lake, you know, by and far is very safe in most areas, you know, where people have their vacation homes and stuff. It's a pretty safe situation. So I would have to beg Shannon to take the kids out on a walk just around the neighborhood. And she's like, okay, well, you know, text me the whole time and have them hold on to the stroller the whole time and all this stuff. And I was like, yeah, we'll be safe. But now I think, you know, she's terrified to let them out of her eyesight, because who knows who is upset with them and, you know, maybe come by their house. So it was a really sad situation. I still think about those kids all the time. Actually, after I stopped getting texted all the time by Shannon, I just thought it was really odd, because she wouldn't leave me alone for the whole summer, like every single weekend. Like I would spend like 12 hours a day plus over there. Like I think one weekend over a holiday weekend, I worked like 58 hours in 4 days. Wow. Like they're gone constantly. So when they stopped texting, asking me to watch them, I was like, well, what happened to them? You know, that's really weird. And so I started just like Googling them periodically. And that's when I think I found the post from the Dirty. Is that what it was?
Yeah. I mean, the Dirty was, it started in 2018. You know, there were some other posts that were out there that were kind of specific to Lake of the Ozarks on Facebook. There was a gentleman by the name of Russell James Fisk who had kind of outed Rick. Well, he didn't kind of, he outed Rick on Facebook. And he was on the verge of kind of breaking things open. But then he was tragically murdered in a random event that had happened in April of 2018. The Dirty was started by one of Rick's good friends who had been hearing through the grapevine that Rick was up to, you know, a bunch of no good. And this is after, I believe he actually somehow gave Rick money, and you know, Rick hadn't given it back, and so to get even, he created a repost on the dirty of Russell's original post. And then from there, that's kind of what helped myself and a few of the others from the onset kind of go down this path of, holy shit, you know, this is a legit con man. This is a scammer, a fraudster, and we need to do something. But that dirty post, for me at least, didn't come out in time. It happened it came out about 2 months after I had been taken. So, but it did help. It helped to make sure that there were others out there that knew. It helped that others were coming forward. So it definitely helped.
Maybe it was a Facebook post or something, because I think his tattoo artist at the lake posted something, and then all these people started coming out of the woodwork. And maybe someone saw it and was like, isn't this the family you're a nanny for? And I'm like, yeah, it is. So, yeah, it's a little shocking.
Yeah, so that would have been Russell James Fisk's post on Facebook in 2016 that you probably saw. That was his tattoo artist, or one of the tattoo artists that did work, and then Rick didn't pay for the work. Ooh. In fact, got them to throw in a bunch of money at the tattoo shop. Over $10,000, almost $20,000 was stolen from, you know, three or four tattoo artists at that shop. So, yeah, everybody was a target. It didn't matter. So what sorts of things, Paige, did you see, or what other things outside of the cameras, you know, that you thought was like, you know, what else was odd?
Yeah, so I was thinking about this before our call. I mean, the whole summer was kind of a blur, but a couple things that stuck out to me. One time, okay, so Shannon was probably in her second trimester when I was watching them, and she had to take all these hormone shots. I think she'd done IVF or some kind of fertility procedure, and so I'd seen Rick give her like shots in her butt, you know, in her hip, fairly often toward the beginning of the summer. And then I don't know, it was a month or two in, and one day I see Rick like getting a shot ready, and I was like, oh, Shannon, I thought you were done with those, because they made her sick and they made her moody. And Rick's like, oh, this is for me. Like, he was straight up like just shooting up steroids in the kitchen, in front of the babysitter, in front of everybody. And it was just like it was so nonchalant. At the time I was like, surely not, you know, like maybe he's diabetic. I don't know. I think I was kind of in denial. And then I was like, no, that dude, you know, like just looking at him, you could definitely tell he's like on steroids. So yeah, he straight up like did steroids one time in front of us. The weirdest recurring thing was that when they left the house, and they would be gone for, like I said, I'd get there at probably 10, 11 a.m. and they'd come home between like 11 p.m. and 1 a.m. So I was there for like 12, 14 hours every day. They would sneak out of the house every time. So they wouldn't be like, bye kids, we'll see you later, I love you, you know. They'd tell the kids like, oh, we gotta go to the bathroom real quick. And Rick will be like, I promise, I'll be right back. I promise, I'll be right there. I'm like, I just hated it. It was just heartbreaking, because I knew what he was doing. And I couldn't call him out in front of the kids, because truth be told, I was a little scared. But so yeah, they would literally climb out the bathroom window, like onto the garage roof, and leave. So it was just bizarre. Like, they didn't want the kids to know they were coming in and out of the house. So they'd come in and out the window, like through the duck door to their bedroom, and they'd like get ready and change and whatever. And, you know, they'd tell Paige, make sure to distract him, make sure that he'll come back here. Or can you bring my blow dryer discreetly, you know, from across the house? and then they leave again. And I just never understood why. And I mean, the littlest one didn't know, but, you know, the other ones did. And so when they started asking, I'm like, I wasn't going to sugarcoat it and lie to them. I was like, you know, I think they did leave. We're going to have fun today, though, so they'll be back tonight. And the kids are always in bed, you know, by the time they got back. So they didn't see him for a really long time. It was, first of all, just strange. Why would you do that? Second of all, like, the trust issues these kids are going to have. It was just very sad. Like, I would tell them, one of the kids, like, I got to go to the bathroom. And he wouldn't believe me. He'd be like, I'll come with you. And, like, I don't feel comfortable, you know, in there with me. Like, the babysitter, like, while she's going to the bathroom, I don't really feel comfortable with that. But, I mean, they would, like, scream because they thought everybody was going to leave them when they said they were going to the bathroom. So I think eventually we came to a compromise where when I went in to go pee or whatever, he would, one of them would be, like, in the shower with the curtain closed. But they knew that I was in the same room with them still. Looking back at it, it's just like the saddest thing. But I don't know. I think by the end of the summer, they knew that I was going to tell it to them straight. Like, I'd be like, no, your parents, they left. I'll be back. And, like, they knew I wasn't going to leave. I hope it didn't mess them up too much at a young age, you know?
So let's go back here, like, and just kind of talk this through, right? So these kids, it doesn't sound like this summer is really like a dedicated, you know, like a summer vacation for your family. It seems like, if I'm hearing you right, they hired you to be a almost near full-time caregiver while Rick and Shannon were out gallivanting and drumming up fake business deals out on the lake. They were sneaking out of the house, which I've never heard of anybody going out a bathroom window onto a roof to leave the house or your kids behind. But do you think that they didn't take the kids anywhere all that often because of what they were doing to other families and other guys and girls on the lake? Like, by this was just part of their, you know, their business opportunity. It didn't involve the kids, so we'll leave the kids with the nanny, you know. And
I definitely think they were down there just for, you know, quote-unquote business. And they're probably afraid to leave the kids back home, and, you know, they probably wanted them close by. But like I said, a couple of them were really little, and they had this huge obnoxious cigarette boat that's, you know, they're super loud, they're super fast. It's not necessarily like a leisurely activity for the kids and the family. So, I mean, I think they were out on the boat a lot of the time. I know that they had a lot of babysitters back home, though, in Chicago, too, because I think one of the older kids was just referring to me as the babysitter, like 2 or 3 months in, like, oh, hi, babysitter, or something. And I was like, you know, my name's Paige, and one of the kids is like, well, we just have a lot, or something like that. Like, I think they had just a revolving door of caretakers in Chicago, too. So it just doesn't sound like they were home much at all.
Yeah, definitely not putting their children first or spending a lot of quality time with them if they're sneaking out the windows to go out on the lake and hang out with their friends or meet new people that could be prospective, you know, victims. And I'll just say that, you know, none of this is certainly, I won't confirm or deny, but at least it's a theory. I do know that they took that cigarette boat out on numerous occasions with many people, many victims in Lake of the Ozarks. And that's usually where the business propositions, you know, kind of started, the friendships started, and then, you know, Rick would find a way to pull, you know, the guys aside when nobody else was around or listening and, you know, pitch his business ideas for, you know, a car wash venture or a TV deal or, you know, let me help you refurbish your house. I've got a guy for this, you know. So that's pretty interesting. It's very sad. I definitely feel bad for their children.
He went to this gym. He was a very dedicated gym goer at this certain spot down at the lake. And yeah, met a lot of young guys. And, you know, that was the sales pitch, right? Come by our beautiful 4,000 square foot lake house. Come out on our huge boat. Look at us. Look how good we're doing. You know, it was a show and tell situation. And it was hard not to think like, wow, look at these guys. Like they really got it all together. So yeah, I think that's certainly what they were doing.
Yeah, you don't have to, you know, tell me twice. I mean, it's what I saw in Rick Dugo at Export Fitness here in the suburbs of Chicago. I mean, you know, all of it was the facade and it was all smoke and mirrors. But I mean, these smoke and mirrors weren't just like, it wasn't just like one Mercedes-Benz. It was also, you know, the 4,000 to 6,000 square foot, you know, mansion and the cars and the boats and the way he dressed. And, you know, it was all part of that front. And every time he scored a new successful scam, it's what paid for the right to do it to somebody else in the future, because everything he's wearing, everything he's driving, where he's living, it all props him up to be something that he's not, right? Which was successful. I mean, he was successful at conning people, but certainly not in business.
Coming up next, part two of the nanny story and insights into what it was like to work for Rick and Shannon Dugo.